Upgrade your laundry routine with a durable and reliable Maytag laundry pair at Lowe's. Like the new Maytag washer and dryer with performance-enhanced stain-fighting power designed to cut through serious dirt and grime. And what's great is this laundry pair is in stock and ready for delivery when you need it the most. Don't miss out. Shop Maytag in-store or online today at Lowe's.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, a reminder that your digital life is always at risk. Every day, hackers steal identities, drain bank accounts, and open fraudulent accounts. LifeLock is here with tips to help prevent you from becoming a victim. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication on your accounts, report scams, and update the software on your devices. And for peace of mind, get LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, LifeLock plans include the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you to your plan's limits if you lose money due to identity theft. Stay smart, stay safe, and stay protected. Get comprehensive identity protection with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. That's LifeLock.com, promo code NEWS, for 30 days free. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
You know, if you're a hospital and you need to hire a licensed clinical social worker, it's best to look at their resume. Make sure that there isn't like accusations of them forcefully detaining a 10-year-old and kneeing on his back till he can't breathe. And then because of that, that former place of employment has to shell out $2.5 million in a settlement. Might not end well for the next person who hires that person either, like Johns Hopkins, is now facing a $200 million lawsuit from the family of Maya Kowalski. The Take Care of Maya case, as we've been following it for you right here. What we're about to hear is the deposition of Catherine Betty, which, interestingly enough, was on tape. Why she wasn't in that courtroom on the stand testifying, kind of a mystery to all of us. I talked to a lot of people about this. They were like, I don't know, this is a little odd. Anyway, it's a long deposition. This is the individual that Jack Kowalski, Maya's dad, said that she stated that she used to come in and slap her on the leg to see if she was in pain, slapping Maya, who has the condition. She said that she would adopt her and that her mom was in a mental home and that she could adopt her and be like her mother while at the hospital. Well, they kept mom away and dad away for 90 some days as their daughter sat there and suffered. So anyway, let's hear her side of the story. This is her testimony, deposition in the trial and the case of Maya Kowalski against Johns Hopkins Children's Hospital in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Can you please raise your right hand? Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
Catherine R. Beatty.
Good. And where do you work?
I work for Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital.
And what is your position?
I'm a pediatric intensive care licensed clinical social worker.
Have you been disciplined in any of your jobs?
Yes.
All right. Have you been disciplined in any of your jobs?
Yes.
All right. Tell me where and why.
I was disciplined at Johns Hopkins for yelling at another coworker.
And what was the consequence? Were you?
It was just a write-up,
basically. Yes. What happened there?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
You guys got into an argument?
Yes.
Okay. But whatever happened, Johns Hopkins felt it was necessary to write you up?
That's my understanding.
Okay, so in any event, after that discipline, were you subject to any retraining of any kind?
No.
And obviously you were not fired.
Correct.
What was the name of the person that made the complaint against you?
Her name is Pam. For the life of me, I don't remember her last name.
And what was her position?
She was a case manager in the cardiac care unit.
What's a case manager? Is that another social worker?
No, case manager's...
The nurse?
No. Well, she is a nurse, but they work to coordinate discharge for medical equipment, medications, home nursing. They work to help discharge patients to rehab centers.
And what was the essence of the dispute?
Yeah.
Here, let me show you. Maybe I can help you. I'm going to show you Exhibit 3 for the record.
Okay.
And what is that date?
11-18-2016. Yes.
So this was during Maya's stay?
Yes.
Okay. And what happened? Were you complaining at the time of covering more than one unit, if you will, or floor?
Yes.
At that time, were you covering more than one floor?
I was covering two units.
What units?
The pediatric intensive care unit and the cardiovascular intensive care unit.
All right. Where was Maya Kowalski? What unit was she in at this time, November?
She would have been on the seventh floor.
And what was that?
The seventh floor is a med-surg floor along with...
Med-surg?
Yes. So some of our medical and surgical...
Okay.
Yeah.
Sort of for surgery.
Yeah. And there's also EEG floor.
Why was she on that floor?
I don't know that.
Okay. But was that your assigned floor? In other words, were you part of med-surgical or EEG?
No, I was not part of that.
But yeah, you stayed with Maya when she moved onto that floor, did you not?
I did.
And then in November, what's the date there?
November 18th.
You were complaining that you were essentially overworked by having both the pediatric intensive care and the cardio intensive care units to look after?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes?
Yes, I'm sorry.
And you chose, nonetheless, to take on responsibility for trying to manage visitation and counseling needs for Maya Kowalski?
It was an assignment. It wasn't something that I chose to do.
Okay, for the record, Ms. Beatty, it's from Nina Bagby Bishop. Who's she?
Yes. She was a social worker that was with the hospital.
All right. And it's to you, and it's dated October 19, 2016. Subject is 709 Maya Kowalski. Was 709 her room number or something? That designation
yes.
there?
Yes.
Yeah, figured. Okay, and it says, Dear Kathy, Avon said you were wanting to continue to follow this child. Please let me know if you plan to do this now that she's on my floor. Thanks, Nina. All right, so I'm guessing Nina was the social worker on the seventh floor?
Correct.
And it says Avon. Who is Avon?
Avon was another social worker.
Avon said you wanted to continue to follow this child. Is that true?
No, it was assigned, and I said I would continue to follow.
Okay, so when Yvonne said you were wanting to follow this child, Yvonne was incorrect.
Correct.
You were assigned it, and you did not ask for this assignment in any way?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Did you receive any instructions, or including to just keep them up to speed, from anybody from risk management?
Yes.
And who was that?
I talked with Patty Condon.
Okay. Patty, a doctor or a nurse?
I don't know what Patty's profession is. She's okay. In risk management.
Okay. Who else?
That would be who I talked to in risk management, mostly. I may have talked to Louise.
Was risk management fairly involved in this case, maybe not initially in October, but after a few months?
Yes.
And so let me ask you something about how you got involved in this case. First, I want to know a little bit about your qualifications for a case that I think you would agree with me is this complex. Would you agree with me this is a complex case?
Yes, I would agree with you.
Tell me what, before being assigned to Maya, what specific training you had in CRPS?
I didn't have any in CRPS.
What is RSD?
It's regional pain disorder.
Okay.
I had to think about it.
All right. How about, do you have any specific training in RSD?
No.
How about Munchausen's by proxy?
Yes, in graduate school.
Okay, and what was that specific training that you had in graduate school?
Psychopathology.
And how long would you say they spent on Munchausen by proxy?
I can't tell you, that was a long time ago.
I mean, was this an entire course devoted to it, or is this one of several subjects of knowing about different abuse disorders? What was it?
It was a course designed for psychopathology that also highlighted, there was highlights of child abuse, different forms of child abuse.
Okay. And prior to the allegations against Maya Kowalski, how many cases, if any, of Munchausen's by proxy, where it was confirmed it was Munchausen by proxy, had you handled?
Three.
All right. Three cases?
Mm-hmm.
Did anyone at Johns Hopkins, management or physician-wise, ever question leaving you on such a sensitive case as Maya Kowalski after the write-up with your conflict with a coworker?
Not that I'm aware of.
So they left you on despite this incident, right?
Yeah.
Would you agree with me that three cases do not make you an expert in Munchausen by proxy?
Yes.
Would you agree with me that you have no background training and experience to provide any expertise in Munchausen by proxy? Any expertise in Munchausen by proxy?
I have a little bit of knowledge of it from the cases.
All right.
But I'm certainly not, I have not researched, and I'm not a...
All right, so when you gained knowledge, though, it was from physicians, I would gather. Psychologists or doctors, people like that.
Sometimes, yes.
Well, did you read things about it or study anything
yes.
about it? Okay, what did you read and study?
So through graduate school, I read many of articles that were written in the medical literature, along with the social work literature.
Specific to Munchausen by proxy?
Yes.
Okay. So then, are you telling us you had sufficient knowledge to determine whether a specific action, inaction, or behavior was consistent with Munchausen by proxy?
That's not my role at the hospital.
Okay. You alone would not know whether a particular activity, action, reaction, symptom was part of what, say, a DSM-4, DSM-5 diagnosis of Munchausen by proxy would be?
No, I would know.
You would know which was a symptom and which wasn't a symptom?
I would know some of them, yes.
Okay, name the top five symptoms of Munchausen by proxy.
The parent seeks multiple medical professionals in order to get diagnoses on very vague kinds of symptoms. The child may be admitted to ERs or multiple hospitals.
All right.
The parent is often unwilling to share information from other providers with current providers. The parents are demanding of certain medical treatments that seem out of place or out of line with the current medical diagnosis. The parents seem very attentive to their child.
Anything else?
You asked for the top five, so.
Okay. I was thinking more in terms of physical symptoms of the child themselves.
Physical symptoms of the child is, again, very vague diagnoses. Symptoms could be just about anything, depending on what the parent was using.
Distinguish for me the telltale lesions from CRPS from, say, scratches.
I can't.
Okay. So these seem like more psychological evaluations about the parent's willingness to share information, right?
That's part of the DSM-5 diagnosis.
Okay. What is your role then?
So my role is to coordinate with the unit the needs for the patient that might be getting the medical team together in order to discuss the progress of a case, to discuss with the parents the medical condition of the child. I work with in making sure that all the multidisciplinary teams are working with the patient that need to work with the patient.
Aren't those medical decisions?
Well, if they are medical decisions, but if I have questions from PT, OT, or speech therapy, you know, I may be working with them to make sure that parents and the providers understand what the needs are. I also work a lot with DCF on cases. So I'm making sure that the DCF orders are followed. I'm working with detectives and CPIs in coordinating their access to the patients, coordinating their access to records.
When you start caring for a patient, do you read the chart?
Yes.
Do you determine what the operating diagnosis is?
Yes.
Did this child's operating diagnosis include complex regional pain syndrome?
Her diagnosis included that, yes.
As soon as this child, the medical doctors, not you, hospital determined in the chart that she did have complex regional pain syndrome, that invalidated any allegation of Munchausen's by proxy, correct?
That was not a determination for me to make.
Well, you said that you'd read up on it, right?
On Munchausen, correct.
And you did recommend on multiple occasions that the child be kept in the hospital, did you not? I just read it to you.
Yes, I did.
And on multiple occasions, you made recommendations to keep the mother away from the child, did you not?
Yes.
And on multiple occasions, you made recommendations to limit the child's contact with certain family members, including the father, did you not?
Yes.
All of the things you were doing were based on a presumption that there was Munchausen's by proxy going on with this family, right?
Not my presumption. At that point, she had been sheltered, and I had to follow the shelter order along with the visitation orders that were given by the court. I made recommendations based on how Maya was participating in her therapies and with the staff.
Isn't it true you were the person in the hospital that had the primary control over who saw Maya, what Maya ate, what she did, who she could talk to?
No.
Okay, who else in the hospital, after reviewing all of these emails and memos we're about to go over, who else had day-to-day control over who Maya could see and not see, and who could come in at what time and not come in at what time? What other person?
That was up to the court order.
You read all these court orders before this deposition, did you not?
I did read the court orders.
And you're aware that when those limitations were put in, that the court then deferred to the hospital for the specifics of everything, right?
Correct.
The court made certain general findings for the benefit of the child, but then deferred to the hospital about how to implement those, right?
Correct.
Order behind you, but you were the person in terms of when we get to the hospital discretion on how to do things, you were the person that had most day-to-day control, if you will.
I was at that point consulting with risk, and so that would have been up to risk to interpret, and I asked many times to have risk interpret them for me, so that we knew what we were supposed to do and not do.
Right. But the day-to-day implementation of the orders left it up to the hospital, right? The hospital's discretion, correct? You can answer.
As much as we could.
Okay. That discretion, then, is it your testimony here that your discretion, whatever actions you implemented regarding who got to see Maya, how much they got to see him, what she ate, all of these things that involved limitations on her life while she was in there, those actually came from the risk management committee, right?
Yes.
If the father has visitation rights, who was making the decision of how, where, and when Jack Kowalski could see his daughter?
DCF.
So you were not involved in making that decision?
No.
Where are the orders from DCF?
This is it.
Okay, it says supervised. So, in order to supervise, what did you understand needed to happen?
DCF had to give us somebody to supervise the visit. We don't do that.
Okay, and did they ever give you somebody to supervise the visit?
Mr. Kowalski had visits, so yes, I would assume they did.
Okay, well, how did you know who was authorized to visit and who wasn't?
So CPI would call, or somebody from the Department of Children and Families would call us.
Who made the initial call to, or either call, to the hotline?
The first one was made by Debbie Hansen, and the second one was made by Lane Brown.
Debbie Hansen. And who's Debbie Hansen?
She was a social worker at the hospital.
Did you ever speak with her?
Well, yeah. I mean, she worked
about
on the team
this
with me.
Okay. And then who was the next one? Lane Brown?
Elaine Brown.
And who was Elaine Brown?
She was their social worker on the weekend.
Did it strike you, or does it strike you at any time, how serious it is to take a 9-year-old girl away from her family?
Yes, definitely.
How harmful that is to a child?
It can be.
Okay. So what did you understand was the reason that a shelter order was entered?
My understanding from the shelter order is that they had information from Dr. Smith and our medical records.
Okay. Dr. Smith then, and JJCH medical records, right?
Yes.
As one of the people who saw Maya the most in the hospital, tell this jury what you saw with your training in Munchausen by proxy that indicated that this family was abusing Maya.
So what I can say is that the medical team reported to me that the parent...
No, I'm not asking what people reported to you. I'm asking what you saw with your own two eyes, Mark One eyeballs. What did you see that would support that?
I heard and saw the mother on...
You heard what?
I heard and saw on numerous occasions the mother demanding from the doctors that the child be given amounts of ketamine. And I heard discussions from the doctors saying that that was too dangerous.
Did you know at any of those times that there were multiple expert doctors who had actually prescribed that amount of ketamine?
I didn't know that.
No one ever told you that Dr. Kirkpatrick, she was under his care and he was prescribing that? Did you know that or did you not know that?
Early on, probably not.
Did you know Dr. Hannah was prescribing that?
Early on, probably not.
Okay, well, if it wasn't JHACH doctors, how would you know what is an appropriate amount of ketamine for a complex regional pain syndrome 9-year-old during flare-up periods? How do you personally know that?
Well, personally, I don't know that.
Thank you. Attending reports, Nemours told the mother the current care the patients receive from other providers is not the standard of care, and it could be harmful, if not deadly, to the daughter. Patient would. So this is you repeating back what a doctor said that another doctor at Nemours, who was not treating the patient, said was the standard of care, right?
Say that again, please.
This note reflects, is that your note?
It's my note.
Okay. So this is your note stating that you heard from a doctor in the pediatric intensive care unit, right? That's where you got the information about Dr. Santana. You never spoke to Dr. Santana yourself?
She was actually on the phone with us.
All right. So you were on the phone when she was talking?
Yes.
Okay. So would it be safe to say then that the basis, your basis with your own eyes and ears, which was the question, for why Maya should be taken away from her family was this request for an amount of ketamine that was in excess of what you heard was appropriate. Is that right?
Correct.
And did you explain to her why the report was made?
I attempted to, but she shut me down and didn't want to talk to me about why the report was made. She wanted me to name the doctor that made the report, and she wanted me to call whoever that doctor was and have them rescind it. She also wanted me to speak to risk management immediately and get them to call her back.
What's wrong with that? That's an indication of child abuse.
No. Let me rephrase that. In all of my dealings at the hospital, I usually don't have parents who ask for risk management and who don't demand that we call the hotline report and have it rescinded. Also, she was saying at that point she had no intentions of following the recommendations here. I watched her and observed her in rounds demanding with the doctors of what to be done.
All right. But look, you're talking about taking a little girl away from her parents. Are you telling me that to the best of your knowledge, Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital took this little girl away for over 3 months because of a dispute over dosage?
First of all, Johns Hopkins didn't take this child away from her parents.
We'll get down with that later.
Okay. So that was a court decided that through DCF.
I understand that somebody called the court, called DCF, and complained that this was child abuse and that this child should be taken away from her mother, and that the people that said that were all Children's Hospital doctors, social workers, and nurses. You understand that, right?
Under Florida statute, we have the responsibility to report all suspected child abuse.
And I'm going to direct you to the second page, which is 001142, plaintiffs 1142. Are you familiar with this, Exhibit 8?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And if you look at 1142, the next page there, it says at the top under the family have the right, the middle column, it says to talk with another doctor or specialist at your own request and expense or to ask for a transfer to another healthcare provider, providing it is medically acceptable and the other provider will accept your transfer. Is that right?
Yes.
Did they have the right under JH, ACH, Bill of Rights for patients to get transferred out of there upon request?
Yes.
Did they have a right, that is, did Maya have a right to a timely response to her complaints of pain, according to that?
Yes.
Did they have a right to participate in decision-making and being informed of options in pain management?
Yes.
Well, if she's repeatedly stating that she's in pain, it's a pretty good indication she's in pain, isn't it?
When we look at pain and when I see kids in pain, Maya was never showed some of the symptoms that we see other kids in pain having.
Okay. Tell me what training you have in the identification of pediatric pain.
So on an ongoing basis in the unit, I work with kids that have chronic pain or that are having pain from certain procedures and or things that have happened to them. We work on coping skills, sometimes relaxation therapies, sometimes mindfulness. I see children in pain from surgeries, car accidents, traumas. We see kids in pain from cancer. We see kids in pain from just, again, a multitude of things that might be happening to them medically.
Okay. Well, are there any accepted medical symptomology, I guess it would be, about identifying pain in children? Any criteria, any objective standards, or is this all subjective?
I think, again, that what we look for at all children's, that when I am actually in front of a child, what I'm looking for, and they're saying that they're in pain, we're looking to see how they're dealing with their daily functioning. We're looking to see some of the things that they might be showing us, because not all children are going to be talking to you. So we might be looking for signs that they're uncomfortable in the bed, they're moving around a lot, they're pulling on an area that they might be in pain, they're avoiding touch. We would look to see if they were crying.
Okay, well, Maya cried, did she not?
Maya cried, but not while she was reporting pain.
Okay. Are you saying that Maya was not really in pain?
I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is, again, that Maya did not show the same type of pain symptoms that other children showed.
She showed exactly the same pain symptoms that other children showed at certain times, and at certain times she did not, correct?
I would say that Maya's pain was different than all the time from other children's pain.
How many complex regional pain syndrome children have you treated on a regular basis?
I think we've seen two or three in the pediatric intensive care unit.
Okay, and so complex regional pain syndrome is a little different than having a broken leg, is it not?
Oh, yes.
Complex regional pain syndrome involves a burning sensation under the skin, right? It's quite painful, is it not?
I've never had it.
Well, have you read anything on it?
I have read something on it.
Okay, so Maya's symptoms were consistent with patients who have, children who have, complex regional pain syndrome, were they not?
Again. I'm sorry, I'm shaking my head. Yes.
They were, right?
Yes.
Sorry. Okay. I mean, they weren't any different than the two or three you'd had before.
Right. Oh, they were different. Yes. No, they were different. The other kids that we had that had complex regional pain disorder were often bedridden for days at a time.
Well, so was Maya.
For the 95% of the time, Maya was up in her wheelchair going to activities within the hospital.
Except from the days when she complained of extraordinary pain, right?
95% of the time that I saw Maya, Maya was up in her wheelchair, and the times that she would report extraordinary pain would be when she was prompted by her mother.
Prompted by her mother.
Excuse me.
Are you finished?
You finished with the answer.
Prompted by her mother, or if somebody asked her if she was having pain. And sometimes that was in the setting of being down in the, we had the child life department has a room, an activity center down on the second floor. So I do know that there were a couple of, maybe it was the guardian ad litem or the CPIs that met her down there. And while they were watching her have these activities, she was reporting her pain as being a 10.
Okay. Is it true that Ms. Kowalski wanted to record the phone calls?
Yes.
With you?
Yes.
But that you objected?
I did.
Why would you object to that?
So, I think that we, all children's, we have a policy not to be recorded. And I was told by risk management that we weren't agreeing to be recorded in those phone calls.
There's a second volume, so they just need to cue it up.
Did you ever have any discussions with anyone from risk management to the effect that the Kowalski case, the Maya Kowalski case, was, and you can use whatever term you want, thorny or difficult or required a focus, was special in some way?
Yes.
And tell me about those conversations.
I can't tell you specifics. I can tell you that that there were definitely discussions that this was different than any other case because of the level of legal involvement.
Elaborate, please.
Usually, in cases that I deal with on a day-in and day-out basis in the PICU, when you have child abuse cases, the patients themselves do not have like a private attorney. Typically, we don't have patients that stay for as long as Maya does and go through as many different legal proceedings as this case did. Typically, we don't look at three or four different discharge dates for a patient. That we have up in the PICU.
What's the, explain about the discharge dates.
So initially, there was a discussion to try to get Maya to Nemours once she had been sheltered. And case management and I worked on that discharge plan, working with Nemours to get them the recommendations they were going to need, or getting them the records, I'm sorry.
And what happened there?
When I called Mom said that there was going to be a discussion with her attorney later that day. I called her back, and she said she couldn't consent or not consent to the discharge to Nemours.
And the reason that she gave was because the discharge to Nemours was with a psychiatric diagnosis, correct?
I don't know that she gave me that information. I think she said that she couldn't, I think all she said to me was she couldn't agree or disagree, or couldn't consent or not consent to the discharge.
Well, did you ever learn that the reason no hospital would accept Maya was because ACH decided to keep psychiatric diagnoses in her record, and no hospital would accept a child with these psychiatric issues, alleged psychiatric issues?
Actually, Nemours was willing to accept Maya.
On what basis?
We could have transferred Maya that day that I talked to Mom, and I don't remember the day, but Mom wouldn't consent or not consent. We also had discussions with, I think it was Kennedy Krieger, who suggested another program, and I can't remember the name of that program.
If the mom signed off, strike it. Did you ever see any of the papers involving the sign-off that the parents were required to make in order to transfer the child?
I don't know what you're asking me.
All right. There's a recording of a conversation between you and Beata about the potential transfer of Maya to Nemours. You didn't tell her or wouldn't tell her what program she would be transferring into. And Maya and Beata said they would only transfer if it was into a CRPS program. Do you remember that conversation?
I don't know what you mean by a recording.
A phone call that was recorded between you two.
I don't. So give me your question again.
Did you have a conversation with Maya?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah, with Mom.
With Mom. Did you have a conversation with Beata on November 3rd, 2016, where there was a discussion about the potential transfer of Maya to Nemours?
Yes, I think I did.
And was the discussion centered on the type of program that Maya would be transferred into?
We were transferring, I think that in all actuality, she was going to an inpatient treatment program at Nemours that would focus on cognitive behavioral therapy, pain management therapy, and PT and OT therapy.
A psychiatric program, in other words. Mm-hmm. They weren't there to treat CRPS. They were there to convince her she didn't have CRPS, right?
Actually, no.
Okay.
It was supposed to be part of CPRS treatment, which would work on cognitive behavioral therapy along with pain management and then PT and OT therapy, and that was the program at Nemours.
It wasn't a complex regional pain syndrome program, was it?
I don't know. It was a Nemours patient or Nemours program, and we attempted, yeah.
Okay, but whatever was represented to Mrs. Kowalski, she refused to have her child committed to that program, right?
Yes. Well, she said she couldn't consent or not consent.
Okay. And then what happened after that?
Maya stayed at All Children's. We continued to look for, we were directed by DCF to continue to look for programs.
Well, so did you ever receive any notification or was there any discussion that included you that the that Maya was not getting better and that CRPS was present, thus the allegations against Beata, the child abuse allegations, needed to be dropped?
No one ever said that to me, and in fact we noted on several occasions where Maya was moving her legs, moving her hands without any pain. Maya was engaging in activities such as foosball, cutting out and making crafts in the craft room. She was out playing the piano downstairs and often moved herself around the hospital. It was only after we gave that information to DCF that Maya then decided or quit moving herself around the hospital for a few days. It was noted in some of the music therapy and in PT therapy that she was able to move her feet and her hands and didn't complain of any pain while she was doing that. On occasion when I would be in the room with Maya, Maya would be showing me her Shopkins, her prayer cards, and she was moving herself in the wheelchair, laughing, giggling, playing. She would be putting on her makeup, wanted to put makeup on me, wanted to put makeup on some of the nurses. And all during those times, there was no pain. And there were, Maya was very engaging, very working really hard with the staff.
So you think, so we understand your testimony, that Maya was happy and thriving in the hospital.
There were many days that we saw Maya doing really well in the hospital and working with the therapists that were involved with her, yes.
And you say, I just left Maya's room. She told me she is furious, angry, and in pain. She told me she can't talk or trust anyone, and she knows there is court on Monday, and it's all lies. Maya told me if I have a problem, I need to talk to her attorney.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So she's telling you there, she's furious, angry, and in pain. Does that sound to you like she's thriving?
Actually, there were very few days that we saw her like this. And this was only after either a visit or a conversation with somebody on the phone.
Uh-huh. So you're blaming it on who this time?
I'm not blaming it on anybody.
Did you listen in to her conversations with her attorney?
No.
Did you listen in on conversations when she was trying to talk to the judge in court?
No, I don't think so.
Mm-mm. So if Maya testifies that the reason she was uncomfortable with testifying in over the phone and wanted to come into court was that she was terrified of you sitting next to her and what you would do to her, she'd be wrong?
Yes.
Okay. She just made that up, that you were sitting next to her during her court appearances.
I don't know that I was sitting next to her. I think pretty she was with her attorney at those times.
Were you in the room?
I don't know. I don't remember being in the rooms.
Did you require Attorney Kelly to leave the door cracked while he was meeting with her?
We may have.
Why did you want to leave the door cracked while Maya was trying to consult with her attorney?
We were not in the room with her, but there had been an episode where Maya said she fell out of her wheelchair and was on the floor for hours. So at that point, it was discussed with risk management. Risk management wanted the door left open so that we could make sure to monitor the patient.
Really? So you think the attorney was going to let his client lay all over the floor and not help her? So you guys had to be there right beside her or listen in? Strike that. So the purpose of cracking the door and being right there next to it, because if right, you were standing right next to the cracked door.
No.
Then, so you were going to be able to hear it by Maya shouting and screaming down the hall?
The door was left open so that the nurses could observe and make sure, because as they were walking by, it was not me observing. This was the nurses observing that were on the unit.
Okay. So, and the theory was that while Maya was in the room with her attorney, there was still a chance she would fall out of the bed and her attorney would not ask for help or otherwise assist his client lying there on the floor. So you guys had to be able to look in. Is that the theory? Was that the theory here?
So risk management, after that happened, wanted to make sure that the door was left open at all times so that there was site to site so we could make sure that Maya was safe, yes.
Why would it be a big deal that she fell on the floor?
I never said that Maya could move around freely. I said that we watched her move around with her legs. What Maya could and couldn't do was not my decision or making. I saw Maya move her legs. I saw Maya move her arms. I saw Maya move her feet.
All right, so the theory then was that because Maya said she fell out of a chair once, you guys had to leave the door open or cracked so that you could see her if she fell out of the chair, right?
That's the direction that we got from risk, yes.
Okay. And so is it explained to you that it was felt that the attorney would not be able or willing to help his own client if she did fall out of her chair with him there?
I can only speak to you what our direction was given, and that is that we had to leave the door open.
So it came down from risk management that Maya would not have, it was necessary to keep the door cracked, even when Maya was trying to consult with her own attorney?
Yes.
Did you ever confiscate a plastic bag filled with
what? Wafers and what?
The host, holy water, prayer book, what else was in there? Did you ever confiscate that?
No.
You never took those away or prevented her from having those?
Never.
Okay. Was Maya allowed to see her priest?
That would have been up to the DCF order. We did have Father Tom that came and visited her when he was there on the weekends.
Okay. Let me show you what we've marked as 13. Can you identify this?
It sounds like it's a telephone conversation.
Okay. Had you ever seen this before?
No.
Okay. Who produced it? Do you know?
No.
Were you aware that on this date that's being described here, January 6, 2017, Maya was tired and spirits low and that Dr. Hannah had told her that she was getting worse?
She did tell me that, yes.
Okay. Did you ever speak with Dr. Hannah?
No.
Why is it that JHACH chose not to discuss Maya Kowalski, or for that matter, Beata Kowalski, with any of the ongoing treating physicians?
That would be out of my scope of responsibility.
Were you involved in efforts to keep Dr. Hannah off the premises?
That would be out of my scope of responsibility.
Was DCF also monitoring the call?
Sometimes they were monitoring the calls.
Why, if DCF was already monitoring, did you keep being there as well?
In the beginning, DCF monitored those calls, and then those calls, we were doing the monitoring. So because DCF and the Guardian Ad Litem's office said they couldn't do those calls. So in order to facilitate the calls to make sure that Maya was getting them, we agreed to do that. I even came in on a couple of Saturdays to make sure that those calls happened.
Okay, but why did you have to be on calls when DCF was already on the calls?
There was a time that DCF wasn't going to be on those calls anymore, and we agreed so that Maya could get those calls with Mom.
And that's not really my question. My question is, during the period of time while DCF was still doing the calls, why was it necessary for you also to be on the calls? Because, you know, they were already being monitored by DCF.
The calls that DCF did, all I did, DCF would call my phone, and then I would take the phone in there and put it on speakerphone.
But why did you have to listen in, too?
That's what DCF asked us to do.
Did you ever take Maya into the chapel?
No.
Did you ever sit Maya on your lap?
Whenever they had the last court hearing, or maybe it was right before Christmas and Maya thought she was going home, I was called by Charlotte to tell, and Charlotte asked me to go in and tell Maya that Maya wasn't going to be able to be going home for Christmas. Maya became very upset, started crying.
I'm just asking you whether you put Maya on your lap.
She asked then to sit on my lap.
Oh, so Maya asked you for permission to sit on your lap? It wasn't my idea? Strike it. So you're contending that this wasn't your idea, that it was Maya's idea that she sit on your lap. Is that your testimony?
Yes.
All right. And did you kiss Maya?
I don't think so.
Were you hugging Maya?
I think that we provide comfort to a lot of kids. So probably why she was sitting on my lap, I'm sure I did hug her.
Who gave you permission to touch the child in this manner?
We provide a lot of comfort to kids.
Now, my question. Who gave you permission to be this intimate with that child?
So Maya asked.
She's 11. What adult, either Maya's mother or Maya's father, the only two people, not the state and not the hospital, who gave you permission to be intimate with that child?
So currently at that time, DCF had custody of the child. And the child and the case manager on several occasions asked that we provide comfort to Maya.
And in your view, comfort included what?
I talked with Maya. She held my hand. I would hold her hand. She asked me to come in and pray with her.
I guess your answer is no one with any authority to permit you to be that intimate with their child gave you permission to do so.
So I do think a couple of times that Mr. Kowalski and I discussed the fact that I provided comfort to Maya.
was Mr. Kowalski complimenting you about it, or were you telling him that you were providing comfort?
I can't tell you how the conversation happened, but I can tell you that Mr. Kowalski thanked me.
So he's being polite. So by thanking you for comforting his child, is it your interpretation that that meant he believed it was okay for you to have the child on your lap and be able to hug her and kiss her?
Again, I don't think that I kissed her.
Are you sure you didn't kiss her?
Pretty sure.
So if Maya specifically remembers you kissing her and telling her it was going to be okay, that's just another thing that she made up.
Typically, I don't think I would tell any of the kids that were in the situation that they're in that everything's going to be okay. I think that we would talk about things look really bad right now, and I'm working more to help Maya with what her thoughts are, not with, like, that's not usually in the repertoire of words that we would have used with her.
Are you a member of the National Association of Social Workers?
Yes.
Are you familiar with their code of ethics?
Yes.
Let me show you what we'll mark, and unfortunately it's highlighted, but I'm going to mark it as 14, and we'll swap out any staple or two, or pen. But let me ask you about section 1.10. Does it appear to you to be the code of ethics for what's your organization called?
National Association of Social Workers.
Does it appear to be your code of ethics?
Could be, yes.
And is there a specific section there about social worker responsibilities regarding physical touching of the patient?
Yes, there is.
And is that section 1.10?
Yes, it is.
Could you read it to the jury, please?
Social workers should not engage in physical contact with clients when there is a possibility of psychological harm to the client as a result of the contact, such as cradling or caressing. Social workers who engage in appropriate physical contact with clients are responsible for setting clear, appropriate, and culturally sensitive boundaries that govern such physical contact.
You had no specific authority to touch that child in that manner, did you?
I was asked by the case manager to provide comfort to her, and Maya asked if she could sit in my lap.
Well, a child can't give consent to be abused or touched, can they?
It's certainly at no point did I touch Maya in any way that was sexually related.
Okay. Would you agree with me that a child cannot give consent?
Children ask for comfort in the kind of medical setting that we work in at all times. We often sit with kids and hold their hands or hold them. I mean, especially when it comes to kids under the age of 10 to 12.
There's a big difference between a kid on your lap with your arms around them and holding a child's hand when they're scared, isn't there?
Maya was sobbing that night because she couldn't go home.
Let me show you Exhibit 15. For the record, it's an email from Kathy Beatty dated Monday, November 7th, 2016, regarding MK. It's to Audrey Peterson. You recognize this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't recognize. I recognize the people on it, yes.
All right. So who's Audrey Peterson?
She was a case manager for the 7th floor.
Okay. Okay, and it says, I'll call you later with massive update. Describe for me what the massive update was.
I have no idea, without going back and taking a look at my notes from that day. So I guess I didn't have a chance to talk to Audrey that day, so I emailed her the next day. Said there was no update available as the parents will not consent or decline the placement at Nemours. There is a hearing today and Thursday that will clear up the matter.
That's a massive update.
Yes, because we were looking at discharge. And we were looking to get Maya on to some kind of physical therapy. So for us, yes, that whenever there's not going to be a discharge, that's a big update for us.
That's massive, that it's not going to be a discharge, huh? That's the only thing you guys discussed about Maya Kowalski or her situation.
Yeah, because I didn't talk to her on the 7th. That's per her email. But yes, anytime there's a delay in discharge, it's massive for us.
Uh-huh. You've got an affidavit on November 2nd, 2016, and then Exhibit Beatty 16, and then we've got this November 7th email regarding massive update, which is 15. And then we have what I'm going to mark as 17, which is what? Tell me what that is. For the record, it's an email from Kathy Beatty to Megan Leaf at My Florida Families, dated November 9th, 2016, so 2 days later. Then the massive update email. Late in the day. What is exhibit?
This is Dr. Diana Young on the 9th day, indicating she did another affidavit for transfer.
All right, this is the second affidavit for transfer?
Yes.
All right, so let me get this straight. Am I correct that you helped on the first affidavit that said nothing about factitious disorder or conversion or anything like that, right?
Yes.
And then you do an email, I'm just talking about the timeline here, you do an email to Audrey Peterson, the case manager, where you say, I'll call you with massive update 5 days later, right? I'm sorry, it'd be 3 days later. No, it would be 5 days later.
Yes.
Okay. And then 2 days after that, there's an email from you to Megan Leaf forwarding this affidavit of Diane Young, right?
This was on the 9th, yes.
All right. And you sent this to Diane Young. Why?
I didn't send this to Diane Young. I sent this to Megan Leaf.
Sorry, you did send it to Megan Leaf. You sent it to Megan Leaf. Why?
Because Diana Young wanted it sent to the state for, I guess they were having a court hearing.
Okay. Then.
Or they were going to get a judge so that we could go ahead and discharge.
All right. So is Diana Young a pediatrician?
Yes.
Is Dr. Dees a pediatrician?
Yes.
Were they both seeing Maya approximately the same time?
They could have been, one of them could have been working for part of the week and then the other one for the other part of the week.
Okay, but they were both seeing Maya, obviously.
Yes.
Both being attending physicians?
Yes.
And then Dr. Young here says the problems are bilateral lower extremity atrophy with conversion and factitious disorder. Do you see that there?
I do see that.
Why the difference between the two pediatricians seeing the same child?
I can't answer that for you. This, I wasn't involved.
You weren't involved in the second affidavit?
No.
Did your massive update have anything to do with the creation of the second affidavit from Diane Young?
No, it would have been about discharge because at that point we were looking to discharge.
Let me show you what we'll mark as 18 and ask you to identify it. And for the record, the first email is from Kathy Beatty, January 5th, 2017, dated, well, sorry, it's JHACH 10160 through 163. Ask you to identify that, see if you know this exchange.
Yes.
And what is this about?
So I think this is the, I'm pretty sure this is the day that Maya was going to the courthouse and then going to see Dr. Hannah. And we were asked to take pictures.
Risk management asked you to take pictures?
So I have to go all the way back to the beginning. So...
So it was 18?
Yes.
17. It's close.
So Dr. Danielson notes in her email about pictures, I was contacted, Patty wanted to know, is CVI able to help out? They can't, they're doing their own pictures in Sarasota. Indicate that I think that we should do them here at the hospital. Patty agrees. She suggests that two people are in the room and she has a camera.
So who's Patty?
Patty Condon is risk management.
So risk management made the decision to have these pictures taken of Maya?
Yep.
And tell me what happened. What did you do with Maya?
The bedside nurse and I went in and took pictures of her arms, her legs, her face, and her stomach.
Was she in her bra and panties?
She was in her sports bra and a pair of shorts. I think we took pictures of her back, too.
Bra, and she wasn't in panties. She was in what?
Her shorts.
Who gave you guys permission? I say you guys. Who gave risk management permission to take photographs of this little girl's entire body?
So that would be, again, I was directed by risk management to do that.
Did you object in any way to this?
No, I did not.
Had you ever taken pictures of a child without any clothes but bra and shorts before? Not your own, but I mean in your professional context.
In professional context in the foster care program, if they were going to visit a situation or when they came back, if there were injuries, yes, we did.
But she didn't have any injuries. She'd been with you for 3 months at that point, right?
Correct.
So did anybody give you any reason why they took pictures?
I was just directed by risk management to do that.
Was there any discussion at all of why it was necessary to take pictures of this little girl in her sports bra and shorts?
Like I said, this started with Dr. Danielson and came down to me.
Who's Dr. Danielson?
Her name, Dr. Danielson was probably the attending that day.
Okay, so this wasn't coming from the government. It wasn't coming from DCF, right?
This was coming from our institution, Dr. Danielson.
Right, not from DCF. This was an internal decision to ACH.
Yes.
What steps were taken to call the parents and ask whether you could take pictures of their child like this?
We didn't call the parents.
Why not?
Because at the time the child was in the custody of DCF and they gave their permission.
How did DCF give permission for you to take pictures of this little girl in her sports bra and shorts?
So they were getting ready to do their own pictures.
Who was?
DCF. They did their own pictures in Sarasota.
So why was it necessary for you to do pictures?
I can only speak to you to what I was asked to do.
They didn't tell you why. They just said do it?
Yep, pretty much.
Well, pretty much.
Yes, the direction was to do the pictures.
Was Maya upset?
Yes.
She did not want you to take pictures of her like that, did she?
She did not.
But you went ahead and took pictures of her anyway.
Unfortunately, we did.
Was there an issue over scratches that Maya had on her?
Yes. So, according to my email, there was a concern that Maya was self-mutilating. And my note indicates on Thursday there had been inappropriate conversations with the mother that had been witnessed by staff. Or that was due to Charlotte's.
Okay. One last email here, and it's 19 because we're taking it out of order. And it's JHACH 9829 through 9831. Show you that. You recognize that?
Yes.
Okay, and what is this?
So this was a letter that Maya wrote on or around November 10th and wanted the judge to see. So I scanned this in, or faxed it to, I'm not sure which, to Safe Children's Coalition.
Who are they?
The community-based care organization that was case managing this.
All right. Did anybody give it to her lawyer or some way to get this to the judge?
That's why we sent it to Tanya Hutchins, who we were asked to send it to so it would get to the judge.
She says, I am not doing well at all. I'm hurting worse than I was at home. Is she telling the truth there? For the judge, in your view?
I can only report what Maya's telling you.
And they are not doing a good job with therapy or managing my pain. Is she telling the judge that?
Yes, she is telling.
Any of the pain meds they give me don't work at all. Had she told you that?
No, she didn't really talk about her pain medications too much with me.
Okay. They talked to the doctors about them, right?
Probably.
Someone dropped me the other day. Did that happen? church for?
I don't know.
My parents did nothing wrong. They just listened to the right doctors for my meds, and guess what? It worked. Okay. And then ever since I got here, I got worse. It's causing me more pain, and I really don't want to go to Orlando for my rehab either. All I want is to go home, be with my family, friends, and never have this problem ever again. Please help me. Love, Maya. And then she puts a P.S. I had better therapy at home. Now, based on... You read this, right?
I did.
Okay. Did you ever have any interaction with any of the attorneys advising ACH?
Yes.
Who'd you have interaction with?
Mr. Hunter, but I also had interactions with another man. I don't remember his name.
Shapiro.
Were you party to any conversations? Don't tell me the contents. Party to any conversations where any of the attorneys were involved?
Yes.
And was risk management involved in those?
I think so, yes.
Let me show you 21 and ask if you can identify that. All right. So you drafted this letter that's of November 29th, 2016?
I typed this letter up from Dr. Amin.
Okay. Did you participate with Dr. Amin in putting together these recommendations?
Actually, this would have come from the medical team.
And who was this sent to?
I think that we sent this to the case manager.
Case manager for whom?
For Maya, for the Department of Children and Family Services. It could have gone to Charlotte LaPorte.
Okay. So this is the letter to the state?
Yes.
Okay. And in this, there's recommendations including visits with father suspended at this time, unless supervised by DCF. That was the hospital's recommendations, right?
Yes.
Phone contact with mother limited to one time weekly, supervised. And mother instructed she can't record phone calls. And mother is given same instructions as father. Do not discuss court case. Do not talk with Maya about her pain and what pain medication she is or isn't getting. Do not talk with Maya about food here at the hospital. Do not discuss the supervised visits when they are or aren't taking place. That's in there, right?
Yes.
Okay. Aren't those exactly the things that DCF turned around and instructed the parents about?
I think that prior to this, there had already been an email. I think that came on around the 17th of November. Charlotte LaPorte had already given that information.
Then why write this? Why include these? If it had already been ordered, why would you do all these recommendations?
You have to, Dr. Amin. You would have to talk with Dr. Amin about that.
And you didn't discuss this with Dr. Amin while you were doing it?
Dr. Amin gave me this document to type up.
What input did you have in this?
I don't think I have a lot of input in this at all. Dr. Amin gave me a letter that she wanted sent to the court or to the case manager. And again, this is trying to position pieces of this to help Maya get to Nemours.
You also recommend Maya's phone be removed.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, that was a lot. Yeah. Nails on a chalkboard by the time you're done listening to that voice, all of it, this, the attitude, the candor. Ugh. gives you goosebumps.
Sick of the ads?
We are too.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.
October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, a reminder that your digital life is always at risk. Every day, hackers steal identities, drain bank accounts, and open fraudulent accounts. LifeLock is here with tips to help prevent you from becoming a victim. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication on your accounts, report scams, and update the software on your devices. And for peace of mind, get LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, LifeLock plans include the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you to your plan's limits if you lose money due to identity theft. Stay smart, stay safe, and stay protected. Get comprehensive identity protection with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. That's LifeLock.com, promo code NEWS for 30 days free. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, a reminder that your digital life is always at risk. Every day, hackers steal identities, drain bank accounts, and open fraudulent accounts. LifeLock is here with tips to help prevent you from becoming a victim. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication on your accounts, report scams, and update the software on your devices. And for peace of mind, get LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, LifeLock plans include the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you to your plan's limits if you lose money due to identity theft. Stay smart, stay safe, and stay protected. Get comprehensive identity protection with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. That's LifeLock.com, promo code NEWS for 30 days free. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, a reminder that your digital life is always at risk. Every day, hackers steal identities, drain bank accounts, and open fraudulent accounts. LifeLock is here with tips to help prevent you from becoming a victim. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication on your accounts, report scams, and update the software on your devices. And for peace of mind, get LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, LifeLock plans include the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you to your plan's limits if you lose money due to identity theft. Stay smart, stay safe, and stay protected. Get comprehensive identity protection with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. That's LifeLock.com, promo code NEWS for 30 days free. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, a reminder that your digital life is always at risk. Every day, hackers steal identities, drain bank accounts, and open fraudulent accounts. LifeLock is here with tips to help prevent you from becoming a victim. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication on your accounts, report scams, and update the software on your devices. And for peace of mind, get LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, LifeLock plans include the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you to your plan's limits if you lose money due to identity theft. Stay smart, stay safe, and stay protected. Get comprehensive identity protection with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. That's LifeLock.com, promo code NEWS for 30 days free. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, a reminder that your digital life is always at risk. Every day, hackers steal identities, drain bank accounts, and open fraudulent accounts. LifeLock is here with tips to help prevent you from becoming a victim. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication on your accounts, report scams, and update the software on your devices. And for peace of mind, get LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, LifeLock plans include the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you to your plan's limits if you lose money due to identity theft. Stay smart, stay safe, and stay protected. Get comprehensive identity protection with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. That's LifeLock.com, promo code NEWS for 30 days free. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, a reminder that your digital life is always at risk. Every day, hackers steal identities, drain bank accounts, and open fraudulent accounts. LifeLock is here with tips to help prevent you from becoming a victim. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication on your accounts, report scams, and update the software on your devices. And for peace of mind, get LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, LifeLock plans include the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you to your plan's limits if you lose money due to identity theft. Stay smart, stay safe, and stay protected. Get comprehensive identity protection with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. That's LifeLock.com, promo code NEWS for 30 days free. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hi, this is Cheekies from the Cheekies and Chill podcast. My fur babies give me everything, and I wish I could give just as much back. But hey, I'm only human. That's why I trust Hill's Pet Nutrition. Hill's science-led nutrition helps you give more love than humanly possible. Most days, my schedule is jam-packed. I'm either out all day recording new episodes of Cheekies and Chill, or I'm stuck in back-to-back business meetings. and I feel guilty knowing my babies Pancho and Rayu are at home waiting for me to get back. But when I'm finally home, that's when I show them how much I love them by feeding them their favorite pet food so they can taste mi amor profundo. This human understands, science does more. Find the right food at hillspet.com/iHeart.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.